BFFT. Live from the home studios, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Six, 108, 111, 115. Is there a difference? Do you think you guys could tell the difference if I took you outside and it was 111 versus like 105?
Probably not. No, I'd be singed either way, so I think I'd only be thinking about my own health.
I find myself getting annoyed at things like the kids not closing their doors.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Gotta close your bedroom doors. I've become that dad. Anna, the other night, two nights ago, I came into the house and she had turned the oven on. I was like, what are you doing? Don't turn the oven on. She looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, I can barbecue that outside.
Exactly, exactly. We had meatloaf yesterday and I was like, let's just take that out on the deck. We'll get that cooked faster.
That's right. It's hot out there. Make sure you hydrate. Brenda Tracy, advocate, lobbyist. I call her Wonder Woman. 1998, she suffered the unimaginable. She was sexually assaulted by four men, three of them college football players. I wrote the story a few years ago. She had stayed in the shadows for 16 years, living in agony. She has now come forward. Her story's been told countless times. She's traveled the country, and she has talked to college football programs, college basketball programs, college campuses, community groups. She's changed laws. She's a friend of this show, and I want to get her opinion on this. Brenda Tracy joining us now. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you're staying cool out there with things that are going on. I want you to kind of maybe put a face on this, because I think some listeners who have called in don't really approach it from the perspective of thinking about survivors, thinking about women. When you see a basketball team hiring somebody who's got a sexual assault allegation and a civil settlement in their past, what kind of emotions came up to you when you saw that?
Well, I think based on my story, and you know my story, so you know the similarities, but it was, you know, for me personally, very upsetting. I mean, just some of the details of, you know, the littered condoms and the rape kit and all that stuff were very much similar to my own experience. And then also just seeing how people talk about the victim or just don't talk about the victim at all, but also talk about the offender and, you know, words like it's a mistake or it happened a long time ago. All of this stuff is really, really difficult to deal with. And I think for a lot of people it is, for and especially for people who have experienced this type of violence.
It's, you know, since telling your story on social media and other places, I do have a following of people who are survivors who tend to follow me or tend to message me. And so I am hearing from people through direct message and email who are saying this is really hurtful. The Blazers interview Chauncey Billups. They say they have vetted him. I'm sure tomorrow they're going to come out and said we did a thorough vetting and we interviewed him. You know, what questions do you have for the Blazers as it pertains to, you know, their diligence?
Well, I don't understand how you get past the rape kit, you get past the police report, you get past even his statements. I think at one point there was something out that said he said he wasn't even there at first until other people said he was. I don't know how you get past the civil settlement. I just don't know how you get past any of that. And there are other qualified candidates. So why are you not going with other qualified candidates? Why are you so stuck on this person with such a problematic history?
Yeah, I think you throw in there that Becky Hammon was interviewed. What role does that play in your mind that, you know, essentially the Blazers are saying, we're going to take a male candidate who's got some questions versus a female candidate? Does that in play at all here?
I mean, for me, it just feels like an extra slap in the face. And it feels like she was a pawn. I mean, it feels like, and I don't know because I'm not there and I don't know all the inner workings of everything that happened, but it feels like leadership drug Becky Hammon and even Damian Lillard into this whole thing as kind of, you know, some smoke and mirrors kind of thing, knowing what they were going to do the whole entire time. So the whole entire thing just feels gross. And I don't like any of the way that any of it was handled. It's all bad all around.
Brenda Tracy with us, lobbyist, activist, speaker, survivor. Brenda, for men out there who are confused or maybe struggling with the idea of, you know, hey, what about a false accusation? You deal with that a lot when you talk to groups. What do you tell groups as it pertains to kind of the idea that men are falsely accused sometimes?
It does happen. It does happen. It's not often. It's rare, and it doesn't occur anymore with sexual violence and any other crime. But 2 to 8% of reports are considered false. That also includes unfounded, which just means we really don't know what happened. So it's more likely that 2% of cases are truly real false reports where nothing happened and that person lied. But the overwhelming majority, like 98%. Are true. And, you know, one of the things that's really frustrating about this particular case for me is that there's so much talk around, you know, whether a report is credible or whether, you know, a victim is credible. Well, you know, did they report right away? Is there a police report? Is there a rape kit? Did they do this? Did they do that? This victim did a lot of, you know, the quote unquote correct things, and yet people keep on moving the goalpost, right? It's kind of like, if you're a survivor, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. It doesn't really matter what you do. You can do everything right, and people will still find a way to defend the perpetrator and, you know, villainize the victim. And it's really, really frustrating. I'm just kind of like, what more do you need? You know, this, and we don't even know what happened. You know, people say all the time, well, and here's the other thing that really frustrates me. We have had so many discussions over the last year about social justice issues, the criminal system, the problems with the criminal system, and all of a sudden people act like someone not being charged with a crime somehow means that the criminal system works. And I really don't get that at all. Like, we've, as a society, have decided that the criminal system doesn't work. It's biased. It can be racist. It can be all of these things. Just because, let's say, a police officer isn't charged with something doesn't mean that it didn't happen. But then when it comes to a sexual assault survivor, all of a sudden, well, there were no charges, it means nothing happened. And I just don't understand the disconnect. I really don't. I thought that, you know, we were moving the needle forward on some of these issues.
I think some of it is going to be really hard to move. Like, I think there's a segment of the audience that once they hear you, Brenda, or they hear others, or, you know, God forbid they have someone in their own family who was assaulted, that it will immediately understand. And there are others, yeah, that I think that just can't get there and or maybe don't want to get there. Give us an idea from your own personal perspective. You know, when you did come forward, you did not have to deal with three or four of these guys that assaulted you, allegedly. I say allegedly, but these guys that assaulted you. You didn't have to deal with them being successful and being elevated to a position of head coach. Could you imagine that?
No, not at all. You know, I remember, well, you remember when one of them was just going to be part of the high school Hall of Fame, and it tipped me over the edge. And I was so upset about that. I cannot imagine being this victim or you know, any victim of a prominent athlete or person and watching them, you know, just go through their career and be successful and be, you know, lauded and defended while you are literally trying to survive. And, you know, a lot of times survivors, we talk about how, you know, rape is like murder. It's like the attempted murder of your spirit and your soul. And it changes everything about your life. And so while the victim is over here struggling, and then you're watching other people, and this person in particular, it's cruel is what it is. Cruel. And it's why I am amazed by survivors and their strengths, because the ability to literally survive these things. And I want to say that many of us don't. Many of us die by suicide or, you know, consequences of sexual violence, you know, drug and alcohol abuse, self-harm, that kind of thing. A lot of us don't make it. But I applaud the survivors who do, because it takes an immeasurable amount of strength and courage to get up every day and face this, especially when it's being just held over you constantly like this.
You spend a lot of time on social media, and I see you mixing it up. You're arguing with people. You're trying to help people. You're trying to educate people. It's got to be exhausting.
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't want to be on your show, John. You, like, I love you. But I'm like, it just feels like it's like a whack-a-mole machine. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you feel like you do work and, you know, we just did the whole F. King Alexander thing at OSU. And before that was Luke Heimlich. And then, you know, as a national advocate, it's just constantly something. And it's just over and over. And it's relentless. And it's just nonstop. And thank God I'm relentless and nonstop too, right? Because otherwise, I don't know how I could do this work. But fortunately for me, you know, I believe there's hope. I believe in the humanity of men as a solution. I think that, you know, things can be done. So I'm gonna keep working.
I've called you Wonder Woman, and I'm gonna double down on that today. I just think the work you've done in changing laws, changing minds, talking to college kids. I said earlier before you came on, one of the things I noticed early was when, you know, you would go out to talk to a community group. I was there a couple of times, and I looked around the room, and I saw very few men in the room. You've had a chance to talk to a lot of college teams and programs. What kind of feedback do you get when you get in the room with a college football team?
So actually, to date, I think I figured out I've probably worked with almost 40,000 young men in the country. And you know, overwhelmingly, the response is positive. And, you know, I always talk about how, and this is true, you know, most sexual violence is committed by men, but most men don't commit sexual violence. And it's, you know, in the room, there's probably always a perpetrator in the room, but overwhelming, the majority of men are not perpetrators. They receive my message really well. And they understand when they leave, they understand, like, it's not enough to just be a good guy, right? It's not enough to just not commit sexual violence. What are you doing to prevent it? Because it's not about just the perpetrator and the victim. It's about all of us around them. And what kind of cultures are we creating that it's okay for us to hire a Chauncey Billups, that it's okay, you know, that, you know, we see doctors on campuses that have 500 victims, right? That's not just about the perpetrator and the victims. That's about all the people around them and how we uphold these cultures of violence. So it's overwhelmingly positive, and it really does keep me going. It gives me a lot of hope to be in those rooms. I was just with Marshall football, same type of response. What can I do? How can I help? Getting guys to think about what they're thinking about, right? Do you only care about your own family members? Because that's not enough, right? My sons think I deserve safety in this world, but they need other men to think that I deserve safety in this world. And until we all decide that people deserve safety in this world, nobody's safe. So I feel honored and privileged to do this work, and I'm going to keep doing it. But yeah, working with these young men gives me a lot of hope for our future generations.
What do you say to people who go, you know, this happened, he settled it, he was not convicted or charged, you know, at what point does he quote unquote deserve a shot to be a head coach? What do you say to that audience?
So I think, you know, right now, I think the problem is not that he can't have a job. It's just, it's not head coach of the Blazers. And I think what people don't understand is that we learn about victims and perpetrators. We learn about the dynamics of sexual violence and domestic violence, for good or bad, through a lot of times through sports stories. Like, we're literally having a conversation because he's becoming the head coach of the Blazers. So now we're having conversations about false reports and victims and perpetrators, and it happened a long time ago. Like, this story is influencing the conversation. It's influencing the way that we respond to survivors in our communities. And it's damaging. What's happening right now is damaging. The Trailblazers are damaging the discussion. They are not pushing the needle closer to ending violence against women. They are propping up a culture where it's okay, it's excused, it's minimized, it's dismissed, they're complicit in this, and it's not okay. So, you know, if we were a society where we actually did due diligence, where there actually was some sort of rehabilitative process, or people were actually really, you know, remorseful or accountable for their actions or something like that, we lived in some kind of great society. Okay, but that's not where we're at. We're not in that type of society. Right now, the messaging is, if you're, you know, an athlete of status, power, wealth, fame, whatever, you can do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter. So I worry about the young boys that are looking up to this guy. I worry about the message this sends to victims of violence of any gender. It doesn't matter, woman, male, however you identify as a human. It's so damaging.
Brenda Tracy is our guest. Brenda, before I cut you loose, you did tell your story. You came forward. 16 years you had sort of lived in agony, and you transformed. I think visibly you transformed. You stood taller.
Yeah.
You looked happier. Yeah. What did that feel like? What kind of catharsis was that to tell your story publicly? Because people are uncomfortable sometimes when you start talking about it, but I think you were far more uncomfortable not talking about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for one, I had lived a double life for so long. I had, and you know this, that, you know, in the public facing, you know, way, I'd gotten a lot of education and was very successful in my personal life. I wasn't okay. But I think sharing my story allowed me the ability to become one person and not live a double life. But on top of that, and I think what's even more important than that, is that I made the decision and knew that I did not cause this. I stopped blaming myself. And when I stopped blaming myself and I realized that there's nothing I could do to make another person use their body to violate mine, when I realized, like, this is on them and not me, I no longer allowed other people to blame me. I didn't blame myself. And then that was when I was really able to, like, embrace my story and share it without any shame, because I didn't do anything wrong. I have nothing to be ashamed of. Those men have something to be ashamed of. And the people who contributed to, you know, them not being prosecuted and mishandling a case, those people have something to be ashamed of. I don't. I was the victim in this. And that part for me really transformed my life. And one of the things I really try to do in my work is address victim blaming and help survivors realize, like, rape should never be a consequence of anything. It doesn't matter the decision, the clothing, drinking, not drinking, whatever it is. Like, it just should never be a punishment or a consequence of anything.
I want to leave that right there. Brenda Tracy, I appreciate you. I'm sorry to drag you on
this
show.
Thank you for having me on again.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm sure I'll be back again for something else.
No, I don't want you on this show ever again. I want, like, us to be like, we need to get Brenda on. It should never cross our mind, but unfortunately it does.
I know. I would love to just be able to just, like, text, like, how are you doing? Haven't heard from you in a while. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Like, keep it at that.
How are you doing? How are your sons?
The sons are good. I'm actually, you know, we've all been locked down, but I just recently started traveling again. And so I'm going to be back out on the road working, and I'm working on some cool projects with my nonprofit, hopefully having a podcast coming out in the near future. Everybody's doing good. We survived the lockdown. Just trying to kind of figure out what life looks like moving forward. So we're good. Thank you.
Stay cool. Make sure you hydrate.
And, yes, you too.
You be well, my friend. All right.
Thank you. You too.
Brenda Tracy, there she is. She does not mince words. I'll take your reaction to that. We'll also play some Punch It audio coming up. You've got the bald-faced truth. Phone number 503-417-7575. Fun last week at the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament. So happy it wasn't 150 degrees at the tournament. Judah, you had a good time.
Oh, And I can't tell you what it meant to be there and to see people and to talk to people, see you again. It was phenomenal.
If you could have 5 more minutes of interviewing any of the guests you had on Thursday's show at the tournament, at the Reserve Golf Course, who would you have?
Jim Joyce was really good. I'd probably keep asking him baseball stuff for another few minutes. Yourself, you kind of popped on for like the last minute, which was phenomenal. The energy was great. But I'd love to talk to you and Anna a little bit more. And Bar 2, you know, but we caught Bar 2 making the turn with his team, and he was, you know, he brought it for about 5 minutes as well. But I could leg out a few more minutes with him as well.
The tournament winner, the tournament championship, went to a team called Well Dressed Mans. They were all in Hawaiian garb, and they came from 2 shots down with 4 holes to play to win the tournament by a stroke. So they made up 3 strokes in 4 holes.
Wow.
To edge out Team NSI and the defending champion Bricks Tavern team that had the lead. Bricks Tavern was up 2 strokes with 4 holes to go and parred the final 4 holes. And they got beat by a stroke. So phenomenal comeback for Well-Dressed Mans, who ended up walking off with the trophy.
Yeah, and when you're parring at that tournament, you're basically giving strokes back at that point. Yeah,
you need birdies, mm-hmm. you need eagles.
You need feathers, big time.
Yeah, big time. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Jim's in Damascus wants to weigh in. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, John. Thanks. Stacey with Brenda, and I really stand for everything she stands for. On the coaching hire, I would have loved to seen us hire the female trailblazer kind of attitude, social injustice for change, that kind of thing. But my call today is about where we're at today. Bottom line is Chauncey is our coach, all right? Tomorrow is the biggest press conference and most important press conference that Neil O'Shea will ever have. What's his plan? Is he going to have Chauncey there with his wife and kids? Is he going to show support for Dame? Tomorrow is a huge day as far as Neil O'Shea's career, and I just kind of wanted to hear what you have to think about that.
Yeah, and this is assuming Neil O'Shea cares what anybody thinks. And based on his last press conference appearance, he was arrogant, he was smug, he was condescending, you know, whatever word you want to use. But I do agree that it's an important press conference from him. We're going to carry it live right here on the station that you're listening to. So you will get it right at noon. I want you to be here for it. So I think that's important, first of all. I do think it is, like, if I were the Blazers,